This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 9th of July, 2021. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Barbara Kearns, and today I'm accompanied in the studio by readers John Richards.
Hello.
And Nick Kearns.
Hello.
Anne Brew, Jane Thomas and Sue Frayne have edited the extracts this week. And so will be usual regular notices. The first is to say that if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with a recording you have received from us, please telephone the contact number which is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. However, before reporting the Sovereign Box as faulty, please make sure it is plugged in and fully charged up. As you listen to the recording, please remember that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And one more note for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order with the most recent first on the list. And now, let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle, starting with the news. Here are the headlines. Anger over wall collapse. Affordable flats too small and expensive. Hat Fair is back in new format. And the first headline story, please.
Certainly, anger over wall collapse. A historic wall in Winchester collapsed during heavy rainfall, sparking criticism of alleged city council neglect. A section fell down on the path between King Alfred Terrace and King Alfred Place by the Nuns Stream in Hyde in the early hours of Tuesday. No one was hurt, but a local person said someone could have been killed. It's not known how old the listed wall is, but it contains stones from medieval Hyde Abbey, the final resting place of King Alfred the Great, that once stood nearby. A local resident said she'd raised safety concerns about its state with the City Council, but no action was taken. Rosalind Hibbert of Hyde Gate said, "It was there at 12 last night when I went to bed, and when I woke up, it was gone. I live dead opposite, but I never heard it. My son said it was going to go because it's been leaning and cracking for a while. I've reported it to the council. A surveyor came, but nothing was done. There's another part of the wall which is all bowing. It's not straight, and roots of the tree are coming round. We were lucky little children weren't here. Someone could have been killed." A council spokesman said, "We have a team on site this morning to secure the wall, close the footpath and ensure there is no further risk to the public. The wall is of special historic interest and we will undertake urgent repair works as soon as possible. The collected stone will be recovered and stored appropriately until a full restoration can be undertaken." In response to the alleged neglect, he added, "In December 2019, Building Control received a report from a member of the public regarding a section of the adjacent wall to where the wall collapsed overnight yesterday, and the council's maintenance team undertook sufficient repair work. Today we have arranged for the length of the wall to be fenced off, and we will appoint a conservation structural engineer to assess the condition, and if the full length of the wall requires further attention to prevent any future risk to residents." Edward Fennell of Egbert Road, Hyde, founder of Friends of Hyde Gate, said, Awful though it is, it can hardly be a surprise to those of us who live locally and have observed with dismay the decline of care and the indifference to the increasingly squalid condition of the precincts of Hyde Abbey. Plans are now afoot for a coalition of local community bodies to work with our councils for a fresh strategic approach for this site of national historic importance. But it should not have taken a collapse of this nature to focus minds on this accident waiting to happen. The wall is near to Hyde Gate, which people are campaigning to convert into a cultural centre. Rob Carter, managing director of Mill Gate Winchester, was among the first on the scene. He said, "Surprised to see this on my way to work. It is a listed wall and will be very expensive to repair. Tree removal will probably be required, and then new foundations and joining with the existing wall will be difficult." Mr. Carter of Northbrook Avenue estimated the repairs would cost around £50,000. He said, "It really is a beautiful wall, so I hope they repair it properly. No doubt the conservation officer will be looking at it."
Affordable flats too small and expensive. Affordable apartments planned for Winchester have been criticised for being too small and unaffordable. In May, an application to build two new blocks at Winnell Flats was approved by Winchester City Council's Planning Committee. They will offer 76 new homes, with 32 shared ownership properties in one five-storey block, split into 18 two-bedroom apartments and 14 one-bedroom units. In the second block, also five storeys, there will be 41 sub-market one-bedroom units to rent. Leader of the council, Lucille Thompson, said that the scheme will fill a gap in the market and help younger people who find it difficult to access the market. But during a meeting of the Cabinet, the scheme came under fire as an increase of £896,691 has been recommended for approval, with the plan now set to cost up to £18,840,000. A report has unveiled that the one-bedroom flats will be around 40 square metres, smaller than the council has usually developed. Former Labour councillor Janet Berry said, "Young people and key workers have borne the brunt of the pandemic in several ways, and they deserve first-class housing, secure tenancies and genuinely affordable rents, not small flats with high rents and insecure tenancies. These flats only just comply with national space standards." She added, "The pandemic has highlighted the need for space inside and out. Instead of overdeveloping sites, the council could be building housing for all ages on council land, such as the Bar End Depot and central car parks." Ms. Berry highlighted that the flats will not be affordable. She said, "The average rent for council housing is £105.23 per week, compared to private rent for a one-bedroom flat at £196 per week. Yet over half these flats here are at over 90% of market rent, which suggested it would be £192.11 per week. Therefore, over 80% of market rent and cannot be classified as affordable." The scheme was also criticised by another former Labour councillor, Patrick Davis. He said, "I genuinely do not understand why you have gone for flat development in an area which already has a very large number of flats and where there are already proposals for something like 100 student accommodations right next door that have yet to be provided. It seems to me it is contrary to the council's long-term policy to have mixed development, to have flats and tiny flats that are barely legal limit on this site seems to be wrong." Concerns were raised by Cabinet members about the allowed occupancy of some of the flats, as the council has argued that occupancy levels of the flats will be lower than Natural England's average of 2.4 people, which has reduced the sum that the council has to pay towards nitrate neutrality regulations. A condition will now be put on the tenancy agreement to prevent more than one person living in some of the flats. But Councillor Martin Todd questioned whether the council had signed up to something slightly draconian. Head of New Homes Delivery, Martin Palmer, said, "We've had to take a view about the occupancy levels of those flats in order to meet the nitrate regulations." The recommendation to increase the budget went before full council on Wednesday after the Chronicle went to print.
Hat Fair is back in new format. Hat Fair returned to Winchester this weekend, but in a new way to allow for social distancing. The outdoor event, first held in 1974, was staged at North Walls Recreation Ground and nearby School of Art car park, and was ticketed. It attracted international, national and local theatre, dance, circus and music acts. Last held in 2019, the outdoor event is normally held in the city centre, on the High Street, the Square and Cathedral Close, and is free to attend, with audiences traditionally throwing money into a hat after a hatter's performance. Organisers, Play to the Crowd, which also runs the Theatre Royal, have been able to limit the audience numbers to provide a COVID-safe and secure event for audiences, staff, volunteers and artists alike. The weather was variable over the course of the 3 days. And that concludes the headline stories. We'll go on with the death notices now, and John will follow with Christian comment. Bloomfield. The Reverend John Michael died peacefully at home on the 27th of June, 2021, aged 85. Chambers. Vincent James. Passed away at home on the 19th of June, 2021. Dancaster, Moira Mary. Passed away peacefully at Abbots Barton Nursing Home on the 22nd of June, 2021. She was late of the gift shop in Alsford. Gibbons, Josephine, known as Jo. 1931 to 2021. Sadly passed away at the age of 89 on the 11th of June, 2021. Lehman, Robert Allen Edward John, known as John, passed away on the 10th of June, 2021, aged 74 years. Slater, Aileen, greatly missed by all. Liz Tatham is the contributor of this week's Christian comment. It is headed Prayers for Change. Thank you, John.
Yes, Prayers for Change. A member of our family has been through some difficult and testing times over the last couple of years, and we have been concerned for their welfare and mental well-being. I have prayed for them consistently and have asked other prayer warriors to do the same. These are friends who I know are consistent and confident in their intercessory life, asking the Lord to intervene and help others. It is a ministry, and one which has prayer networks for the benefit of others. This person who has been prayed for has suddenly had unexpected and wonderful opportunities opening up for them. I'm standing with them as all the doors that seemed closed have suddenly opened and the light shines in from all the doorways as we look at the wonderful view. We could put this change of fortune down to grit, determination, encouragement and love, and that is all part of it. I believe too, though, that all of that is supported by prayer, and that our intercessory intervention allows God's Spirit to move and shake and bring about change. For reasons which are hard to understand, the all-powerful God wants our prayers. A priest reminded me recently of the book of Revelation, which says, "The 24 elders fell down before the Lamb. Each one had a harp, and they were holding golden bowls of incense, which are the prayers of God's people." This priest reminded me that every little prayer, every moment, no matter how small, pours into that bowl and fills it until it tips over, pouring over us as we are prayed for. When I pray for people or situations, I hold that image and keep faithful and keep trying and praying. Sometimes I'm amazed at sudden and unexpected results, and sometimes I tire and wonder when there will be an answer. Of course, that answer isn't always what we want or expect, but prayer is part of our relationship with God, whether it is intercession, contemplation, or conversational. Jesus prayed to his Father constantly. He went into the desert to be quiet. He raised his voice to heaven in public, gave us the Lord's Prayer, which says everything we need to say. And at the end, he prayed for the cup to be taken from him, but then gave in to God's will. At this time, he was distraught, beside himself with anguish. But angels were sent to comfort him through the terrible ordeal of waiting for what he knew was to come. Now he lives in another place, but relates to us still, and our prayers are heard. We should and can pray in confidence and ask for help, taking others' needs to God, and be assured we are filling up those golden bowls. Many churches have prayer networks. Before COVID, we had books where you could write your request. However, you can ask for prayer and be confident it is heard.
Well, there's a wide range of subjects in Letters to the Editor this week. We've selected some of the best for you, and Nick will start us off with the indoor market.
Yes, this one's from Peter Rees. "Sir, with the imminent planning application by Travel Lodge to increase their room capacity, redeveloping the first floor and above of the Debenham site, time is opportune for the City Council to continue considering the growing interest in the ground floor being transformed into Winchester's High Street indoor market. Despite the ownership by Surrey County Council, the reasons for this are obvious. An immediate increase in footfall in the High Street and side streets, a greater range of stall choice every day, a reduction of some stalls on the High Street, but the new location would stimulate interest, creative opportunities for small start-up enterprises, new businesses and new traders, open 7 days per week, counteracting the less shop days of Monday to Wednesday and increasing footfall overall, wider choice for all, close to the bus station and therefore more incentive for people to travel into the city. This opportunity could be a real winner for everyone. Encouragement and the attraction of new traders would be possible. The setup costs could be significantly reduced with creative and imaginative planning. The scheme could run for a trial period, perhaps a year, being reviewed and evaluated. Many other UK towns and cities have a successful blend of indoor and outdoor markets. This possibility requires vision, commitment, and a focus on creating a very worthwhile addition to the centre of Winchester, a place where established traders could work alongside others. In a post-COVID situation, the work on such a scheme could have a very positive and innovative outcome, helping to lift the local economy and public morale. I strongly advise the council to strenuously explore the feasibility of such a project in collaboration with Surrey County Council. Let's develop the spirit of accepting and exploring public ideas to enlarge the business and trading aspects of our city, as well as giving the public a significant increase in choice. The Debenham site presents a special and serious location for an indoor market. Let's get on with it. And that's from Peter Rees, member, Winchester Constituency Labour Party, Monarch Way, Winchester.
Boot Camp Blues. We have two letters here on the subject. Sir, as a Hyde resident, I take exception to Eileen Berry's letter in the Chronicle of July the 1st with reference to boot camp exercise groups in North Wall's recreation ground. Do not make assumptions because you are only aware of two objectors about the loud music that is used at these boot camps, that only two people object to having to listen to this music. Firstly, these boot camps are positioned near homes, usually near the tennis courts. Why can't they operate away from the houses? And secondly, in these days of modern technology, why can they not use Bluetooth music players and earphones? Then they can play it as loud as they like without disturbing anyone. I watched a cricket match and tennis court users trying to have peaceful exercise with this boot camp in between blaring out their boom boom music. I can't think they were happy about it either. We're not objecting to the boot camps, just the irritations that are totally unnecessary. Also, it is not only an hour each end of the day. We also have personal trainers who use the car park area throughout the day, again, near residential areas. Not all use music, but there are constant thumping of tyres and chain rattling. Some even use the Hyde Memorial Garden structures as their apparatus. Not an appropriate use. If you're trying to relax in your own garden near these areas, I do not think it acceptable to have to put up with unnecessary noise used to promote commercial enterprises. There used to be signs in the park which prohibited the use of radios. What happened to that? I would also like to applaud Hazel Agomba's letter of Chronicle June the 24th. Yes, this is a resident of Hyde's view, but I am sure shared by most city residents who use and have used the park for the past 50 years or more. Let it remain as it is. If it ain't broke, don't seek to fix it. One last comment. Over the last few years, the maintenance of the park has been very poor. This is something that definitely needs addressing. And that's from Pauline Moore of King Alfred Place, Hyde, Winchester. And there's also a note from Liz Gardner, also of Hyde, who says, Sir, I am lucky enough to live in Hyde and to have the park close by. But the flip side of this is that we hear everything that goes on in the park. Every sporting cheer and whistle, every musical event, every happy gathering, and the occasional altercation too. Some of one or two of us get grumpy once in a while. Please remember, it cuts both ways. Chronicles letters, July the 1st. And that's from Liz Gardner of Monk's Road, Hyde in Winchester.
This letter from Mary Pearson is entitled Traffic Growth. Sir, in an article on page 4 of the Chronicle on July the 1st, reference is made to an increase of 25% traffic on Eastern Lane as a consequence of the M3 Junction 9 redevelopment. Two through routes run off Eastern Lane, one being Winnell Manor Road, traffic calmed and running through the heart of the Winnell housing estate. The other, Wales Street, is also residential and is the main and much used pedestrian route to the city centre from Winnell and the Eastern Lane student residences. Wales Street runs alongside a beautiful riverside path and skirts the Winnell Moors Natural Reserve. It is not the effect on these of the disturbance while construction is underway, but the permanent and irreversible consequences. I believe that 25% extra traffic on what is already a congested road at times would be harmful to the health and well-being of local residents. They should not be sacrificed to the interest of M3 motorists. I believe, too, that it is not only local residents who would suffer should this proposal go ahead. The city as a whole would lose an understated but nonetheless valuable part of its identity. I hope our local councillors will do their best to ensure that what is currently on the drawing board goes no further. And so writes Mary Pearson, Manor Close, Winnell, Winchester.
Ian Holmes writes about the Winnell Flats proposal that we covered in the headline articles. Sir, without hesitating, I too would object to the plan to build two new blocks at Winnell Flats. It is not often that I support the Labour Party, but I fully support Patrick Davis and Brian Pitts with the points they made in a recent edition of the Hampshire Chronicle. More flats means more people, more cars, more congestion, more pollution, and many more problems for the infrastructure, as I have witnessed in a different area. Added to which, right now we are addressing potential changes to Junction 9 on the M3, due mainly to the increase in the volume of traffic through that point. Don't different departments communicate? Thus, I give an emphatic no to the new flats, but an even more emphatic yes to a park and ride facility in that very area. It should have been constructed in that area 25 years ago. And that's from Ian Holmes, Mortimer Close, Kingsworthy.
Post office closure. Sir, as a resident and active member of Bishop Waltham's community, I can say with certainty that there has been no witch hunt, chronicled July the 1st, which, it has been stated, led to the temporary closure of Bishop Waltham Post Office. What has been the case is that one person working in the post office saw fit to be extremely rude and unhelpful to customers on many occasions, which I personally witnessed and experienced. These concerns were shared on Voice for Bishop Waltham Facebook page. On no occasion were other members of staff implicated in this situation. This suggestion was made by the person whose customer service has been questioned, perhaps in an attempt to deflect attention from themselves. On the contrary, I have heard nothing but praise for the other members of staff for their helpful, efficient and pleasant service. And that's from Jill Thulkeston, Albany Close, Bishop Waltham.
Unhappy Flock is the title of a letter from Michael Campbell. Sir, on receipt of the latest Winchester Diocesan newsletter, which refers to the deeply unfortunate state of affairs pertaining to our diocese at the moment, it is worthy to note that the Bishop of Winchester has chosen to extend his contemplation of his position until the end of August, from the original period of 6 weeks. This would appear to make a total period of contemplation amounting to approximately 15 weeks or nearly 4 months. During this time, much of diocesan business, and especially matters relating to the drastic changes the bishop has instigated to the mission of the diocese, are held in limbo. With respect, this is totally unacceptable, and shows absolutely no consideration from the bishop for the multitude of people affected by his actions both now and in the past, and additionally his inaction since he was forced to stand aside. Now that the whole diocese, indeed the whole world, is aware of his position, this further lack of consideration for others paints not just him, but the whole church in a very bad light. I am well aware from past experience that correspondence to senior members of the diocese is being intercepted, confiscated and read, and indeed passed on to others in an effort to support the Bishop of Winchester's perilous position. I hope, therefore, that from the content of this letter, the bishop will learn of the dissatisfaction that a considerable number of Winchester's congregation have in him. That letter is from Michael Campbell, Sheldon, Alton.
And another view on the same matter is written by James Anderson, entitled First Casualty. Sir, from the headlines, one might think that the Bishop of Winchester, Tim Dakin, had committed a serious crime. Chronicle, July the 1st. Some 20 clergy insist that he be removed. For what? A disagreement over policy? As we know from other ecclesiastical bum fights, such as at Christ Church, Oxford, some very nasty behaviours can emerge. The C of E is an Episcopalian church, ruled from the centre by definition. Were it otherwise, it would be a nonconformist church. Yet much of the diocesan rebellion appears to be the work of an evangelical group. It may not be obvious, but if parishes want more autonomy, they are in effect asking for the breakup of the Episcopal Church. Changing the bishop will do no more than paper over the split. One thing we can all agree on, editorial, Chronicle, July the 1st, is that fairness and Christian values have been the first casualties. From James Anderson, Wright's Close, South Wanston.
And staying at the cathedral, we have some creative children. Sir, magical. If you go down to the cathedral today, you're sure of a big surprise. Winchester Cathedral Close, that is. I went to the Cathedral Close, Winchester, today and was met with a wonderful surprise. The wonderful children of Wickor Primary School in Porchester, Fareham, have been so creative and have left lots of their creations just outside Winchester Cathedral by the railings to the left of the cathedral entrance. Chronicle, June 24th. The children of Wickor Primary School have made lots of funny three-dimensional animals, very colourful psychedelic tree trunks, and lots of drawings and paintings of animals. The theme of the creations is climate change and taking care of all the animals, big and small. It's a wonderful sight to see. The children of Wickor Primary School have done so well and have been so creative. I recommend that everyone goes to see these wonderful creations. Well done, the children of Wickor Primary School. Thanks for showing your wonderful creations in Winchester. And that's from Paul Hickey of Parchment Street, Winchester.
This letter from Nick Tout, which is entitled Need for Action Now at River Park, is accompanied by a photograph of River Park Leisure Centre in Winchester, which is all boarded up and looking very forlorn and sorry for itself. Sir, top job the new leisure centre at Bar End, but the old River Park is a disgrace. What's the plan, Winchester City Council? Another stalled project like Silver Hill and Station Approach. Action, please, now. Winchester is meant to be an historic city. Oxford doesn't look like this. That's from Nick Tout, Springvale Road, Kingsworthy.
Simon Lever writes on wine growing. Sir, further development and expansion of vineyards across the region from Winchester to Beachy Head is excellent news. Chronicle, June the 24th. The fact that wine has been produced in the area since Roman times is remarkable. Ironically, warmer summers have contributed to the increased success of grape growing. With only a small percentage of wine being produced in the area, the opportunity paves the way for expansion, investment and jobs. Welcome news. Currently, 1 million bottles a year is outstanding, with the forecast estimate to double during the next 3 to 5 years to 2 million bottles. A homegrown success story. And that's from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
And Needless Lights is the intriguing title of this letter from Anne White. Sir, I wonder why Carla Holmes find it necessary to turn on all the lights in the unoccupied homes on King's Barton. I thought we were supposed to be looking after the planet. It looks like Blackpool at night. What a terrible waste of energy. That's from Anne White, Old Gardens, Winchester.
And Verity Coleman writes about verge cutting. Sir, the City Council spokesman who responded to your article about over-enthusiastic mowing of verges, Council slammed for mowing verge chronicle June 17th, precisely highlighted the problem faced by those of us who would like to see our local verges full of wildlife. Any changes would have to be agreed by all parties. Winchester City Council, Hampshire County Council, Highways. We hope that the new grass management steering group can achieve coordination and progress. And that's from Verity Coleman of Abbotsworthy.
And finally, Fiona Fallon writes, asking a question. Sir, a very simple question. We can go shopping. We can fill our cars with fuel. We can now move freely around Britain, eat in restaurants and go to the pub. But we still have to make an appointment to go to the recycling centre. Why is that? From Fiona Fallon, Travellers End Week in Winchester.
A good question indeed. That's the last letter. There's no say or Q&A column this week, but if you have an opinion or a subject that you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could write an old-fashioned letter to the editor at number 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And now we'll continue with Chronicle Comment, first person, letter from Westminster and Belgarum. And editor heads up his article with this week with questions over the collapse of wall. Someone could have been killed, so said a local resident after a section of historic wall collapsed early on Tuesday. Yes, had the weather been as bad a few hours later, the footpath that was inundated under tons of rubble could easily have had children had people walking on it, including children going to school. The city council is said to have been warned that the structure was deteriorating and nothing was done. This needs to be investigated as a matter of urgency, and clearly the council needs to conduct a review of its other historic buildings. The Chronicle hopes English Heritage will check its structures too, such as the walls around Wolsey Palace along the Weirs. Hyde 900 founder Edward Fennell is right to criticise the council for years of neglecting the city's most prized asset, its heritage, and its unique place in the story of England. He makes no party political point, and the underlying reason is the chronic pressure on local government finances over decades. But with luck, this incident will be a wake-up call that fundamentally the city's prosperity depends not on taking such things for granted. Now, Ron Allison has something to say about Wembley via Wimbledon in first person this week. John will tell us more.
Yes, he does. Wembley via Wimbledon. It may come as a surprise to some of you, but take it from me that it's true. Not everybody loves and follows professional football. Those of us who do call it simply football, and there are certain results which matter enormously to us. Take Southampton. My club, known universally as the Saints, or whichever is your national team. It might be England, Wales, Scotland or Northern Ireland. But maybe your passion is for somewhere else. But no matter whatever the result, your mood, your temper perhaps, is lifted by a win or even by a draw. Defeat, on the other hand, will leave us unquestionably out of sorts. Now, is this really grown-up behaviour? Well, it seems as if it is, or at least the way so many of us behave. This leaves us wanting to understand why this is so. Many others would be pleased to know as well, to appreciate, if that's the word, why when so much else is going on around us, every day our mood can be determined by a hat trick of goals or a nasty foul followed by a sending off. For many of us, this all began when we were still at school. All that was necessary for us was some space, enough for us to form two sides, some coats or goals, and of course a ball. The proud owner of this ball was not only guaranteed to play, he would probably be the captain too. There was no need for special kit, that all came later in our lives. But there was no lack of commitment, nor in some cases shortage of skill. It was possible to see ball juggling like a pro, a talent that would be in future be on display at St Mary's, Bournemouth, or even Fratton Park. I must not give my prejudice away. Looking back across these years, I now appreciate how much we have learned from all those ad hoc kickabout games. First and foremost was to realise that valuable as was each individual, it was only as a matter of as a member of a team that we would fulfil our potential. For paradoxically came the realisation that brilliant as we might have been at juggling a ball or playing a keepy up, we would never be able to give of our best unless we had at least equally skilful talents playing alongside us. I also have one other thought, which is to recall the reaction in the TV studio when England beat Germany in their European Championship match. Back in the day of my own time, as an occasional presenter on television, the ruling was to remain somewhat remote and not to act like the unruly fans. Happily, no such restraints were to be seen when England scored. At last, the Germans had been beaten by us. By the time you are reading this, we will have made it through to the finals, at least that's my hope. Whatever the outcome, Gareth Southgate has lifted both our spirits and the cloud of his 1996 penalty miss. As you were reading this, quite probably your TV is also tuned to coverage of the championships at Wimbledon. Some thoughts on this perennial treat. As one who thoroughly appreciates the joy of sport, Wimbledon itself and the coverage by the BBC is one of each year's treats, bringing together as it does the very best of sporting and broadcasting expertise, it justifies the highest accolades. From this column, they are thankfully given.
The Meon Valley MP, Flick Drummond, has a few words for us this week. Here's the letter from Westminster. Nick.
I very much welcome the Prime Minister's announcement that nearly all COVID restrictions are likely to cease on July the 19th. I voted for a pause in the roadmap in Parliament last month so we could see if the Delta variant would impact, but the data is clearly showing our vaccines have severely weakened the link between infection and serious illness. The pause also allowed us to vaccinate an extra 10 million people, most of them young. Infections are rising, but deaths remain low. This is what vaccines are all about, and it is time to trust them. Another variant might defeat the vaccines, or the virus might suddenly mutate in a serious way, but the evidence right now is that that is not happening. As I've said, we need to learn to live with this virus, and soon every adult will have been offered a jab that protects them. It is now time to end restrictions and start getting back to normal. I would not have voted for further extension of COVID restrictions after July the 19th. The only scenario that would change my view is a new variant emerging that renders the vaccines ineffective, or a surge in infections overwhelming the NHS. Now life is getting back to normal. I have been out and about in Meon Valley, meeting business owners and local organisations. Many companies have not only survived COVID, but thrived. Others, especially in hospitality and travel, have not fared so well, and will welcome July the 19th with open arms. To understand more, I attended the Travel Day of Action at the end of June, and I met the president of the African Travel Tourism Association and others from the constituency to discuss the ongoing challenges. We discussed the risks of reopening and the financial support to travel companies and suppliers, and the Green List, which I hope will continue to expand through the summer. It is important that we fully open up this industry, which employs a great many people, as soon as possible. However, COVID has led to a staycation boom. This is a silver lining for the pandemic cloud, as many local hospitality and tourism centres have reaped the benefits. We must do all we can to support our local economies and help them bounce back. Hampshire has many world-famous tourist attractions, as well as smaller top-quality offerings. This summer, please go and support them if you can. I think Matt Hancock did the right thing when he resigned as Health Secretary over breaking COVID social distancing rules. I have no interest in commenting on Matt's private life, but I do believe his position was untenable when he broke those rules, because many, many people all over the country have adhered to them for 16 months. I think Matt did a good job. He worked incredibly hard to ensure our NHS was not overwhelmed and we had vaccines to fight this virus. In these important areas, he was very successful, and I wish him well, while not condoning his behaviour. I also wish his successor, Sajid Javid, the very best. I know him well. I'm sure he will make a difference in what is a tough job at the best of times. And as Barbara said, that's from Flick Drummond MP.
Thank you, Nick. Well, Belgarum's been busy this week. We've got three little pieces with some rather nice pictures. The first one, oh, absolutely lovely. It's a row of swans swimming along the Itchen with the trees dipping down into the water, with Mummy and Daddy Swan and eight cygnets. And the story goes, swans with a family of eight cygnets getting near fully grown. Fiona Hollands took a lovely photograph recently at Bury Bridge on the Itchen in Twyford. It's relatively unusual, excuse me, to have a family of swans with so many cygnets grow to such a good size when there are so many potential hazards from enemies such as foxes and other predators, as well as the sometimes clumsiness of humans. Belgarum wonders if the lineup of the cygnets implies some sort of pecking order, with the strongest and biggest at the front and the runt at the back. Actually, they all look about the same size. The next thing he writes is new mural at Jigsaw. And there's a picture of a mural on the brick wall on the side, up at the sort of upper level on Little Minster Street, above the Jigsaw shop. Belgarum was surprised to see this mural on the side of the new Jigsaw store on Winchester High Street. Presumably it has planning permission from the City Council, as it may spark other traders to consider doing the same. Celebrating the return of Jigsaw to the High Street, it adorns the side of the building on the corner of Little Minster Street and could be easily missed. Belgarum likes it. but it could perhaps have been bigger. If going to create such a mural, why not make it really big? In for a penny, in for a pound after all. For anyone who thinks, what is the world coming to? Such painted adverts were a common feature around the city in late Victorian times and the first half of the 20th century. Bulgarum has written before about the faded but still legible sign for the motorworks on Parchment Street near Stonemasons Court, which stems from around the turn of the 19th and 20th centuries. Another is the Nestle ad on the little shop that once operated on the corner of North Walls and Upper Brook Street. And the third little piece has a picture of one of those lovely old-fashioned street lamps, historic ones in the city centre, and there's a blimp just above it in the clouds. Blimp spotted over area. A blimp was seen soaring over Winchester last Thursday. For the first time in over a decade, the Goodyear blimp returned to the UK and flew over the south coast. It is known throughout the world for its aerial coverage of the most watched events in sports and entertainment, ranging from FA Cup finals to Live Aid. The flight path took it over Eastbourne, Brighton, Worthing, Portsmouth, before heading inland over Winchester, Horsham, Royal Tunbridge Wells and finally Dover. And it seems that the splendid photograph I've just described was taken by Anne Oddie from St James Lane Cemetery. Oh, no, it was taken from St James's Lane Cemetery. She's not from St James's Lane Cemetery. I should make that clear. Right, sadly there's no historical items. I do miss them. Or what's on this week. So here are the lighting up times. On Saturday the 10th of July, the sun will set at 9:19 p.m. And on Wednesday the 14th of July, the sun will rise at 5:06 a.m. and will set at 9:15 p.m. The weather observation at Otterbourne for the week ending Monday the 5th of July showed rainfall for the week was 39.8 millimetres. Quite a lot, bringing the total rainfall for the year to 460.9 millimetres. And now on to items of general news. John, would you like to kick us off, please?
I will. This is a nice story. Schoolgirl's 50-mile cycle for water aid. She may be just 11 years old, but Iris Lewis is set to cycle more than 50 miles in the name of charity. The Western School pupil is undertaking a mile ride along the South Downs Way on July the 3rd and 4th. During January 2021 lockdown, she decided that she must think of other people suffering around the world and aimed to raise £600 for water aid. Iris said, "Even when I am sad that I'm not at school and can't see my friends, at least I have clean water to drink and I'm safe from most waterborne diseases. But in some parts of the world, people walk miles for clean water. I wanted to help to do something about that." Iris, who took up cycling during 2020 lockdown to keep busy, will cycle the South Downs Way from Winchester towards Brighton. She will complete the journey with her mother, Zoe Lewis, who said, "Iris has been really concerned and thoughtful about other people during the pandemic. This was her idea, and I'm happy to support her. Most importantly, Iris wants to spread the message from Water Aid that we, quote, must strive to get clean water to every human being as a basic human right," unquote. So far, £673 has been raised, but donations can still be made to help Iris exceed her target even further. And there's a photograph of Iris with her helmet on, I'm pleased to see, with her bicycle and balloons and a large poster. "Help us raise £700 as we cycle 50 miles," it says. So good luck to Iris.
Here's another fundraising activity that's just been going on, entitled "Gruelling Walk in Memory of Loved Police Detective." During the last weekend in June, a group of friends and supporters completed a gruelling overnight 100-kilometre sponsored walk. The walk from the River Adur near Shoreham to Winchester Cathedral was both in celebration of the life and memory of a much-loved man and to raise money to fund the MSA Trust's research into a rare disease. Mark Ashthorpe from Colne Common, who worked for 30 years in the police, including as Detective Chief Inspector, died from multiple systems atrophy, MSA, in December 2019, a debilitating progressive neurological disorder condition, only 2 years after diagnosis. The walk was both a celebration of his life and to raise money to fund the MSA Trust research into this little understood disease. Mark was well known in the area, and walking sections of the South Downs Way during lockdown of 2020 helped his wife Debbie and her friends and family come to terms with losing him. And you can donate at www.justgiving.com fundraising Debbie/Ashthorpe. More than £4,000 has been raised. So that's Just Giving Debbie-Ashthorpe, spelled A-S-H-T-H-O-R-P-E. And this article is accompanied by three photos showing the celebrations that went on after they conducted the walk. A group of them stood outside the cathedral, all with arms raised in triumph.
And staying on the charity fundraising theme, Get Your Race On for Cancer charity event. People are being urged to look beyond lockdown by making a date to join Cancer Research UK's Race for Life in Winchester. The charity's much-loved events are aiming to return to the city this summer, but with socially distanced measures to keep participants safe. Money raised will help scientists find new ways to prevent, diagnose and treat cancer, saving lives as the charity fights back from the impact of the pandemic. The 3K and 5K races set to take place at North Walls Recreation Ground on Sunday, August the 29th, are open to people of all ages and abilities. Sam Morris, Cancer Research UK's spokesperson for Winchester, said, "Race for Life offers the perfect opportunity for people across the region to run, walk or jog and raise money for life-saving research. All 400 mass participation Race for Life events across the UK were cancelled last year to protect the country's health during the COVID-19 pandemic. So this year, more than ever, we need people to enter the Race for Life. For the people we love, for the people we've lost, and for the one in two of us who will get cancer. This year, participants will set off on the Race for Life course, either alone or in small, socially distanced groups. Hand sanitizer will also be provided, with participants encouraged to use it before and after the event. Sam added, "We'll ask participants to respect social distancing before, during and after the event. But we promise our events will remain colourful, emotional and uplifting. The safety of our Race for Life participants is our absolute priority. We've been constantly monitoring the COVID-19 situation and have developed ways to ensure our events can operate safely following government guidance. Sadly, cancer touches almost every family at some point. Every step our scientists take towards beating cancer relies on our supporters. That's why we need as many people as possible across Winchester to join us, to stand united and do something extraordinary to help beat cancer. We know that 2020 was a year like no other, and we had to overcome many challenges thrown our way during the global pandemic. But this past year proves more than any other the value of investing in science and medical research and what can be achieved by working together. Just like science is our route out of the pandemic, Science is our route to beating cancer. And the article is accompanied by a picture of a load of mostly ladies, all in the traditional Race for Life pink T-shirts, all looking as though they're about to start. Although, actually, I think I can see one chap in the middle, but he is wearing pink.
Book tribute to Suburbs Dead. They gave their lives for their country more than 100 years ago, but a group of Winchester people have ensured their names will not be forgotten. A new book, We Will Remember Them, The Great War Dead of Full Flood and Weak, Winchester, has just been published, the result of 6 years' work. Recently, the six authors, Derek Whitfield, Geraldine Buchanan, Jenny Watson, Josephine Coleman, Cheryl Davis and Steve Jarvis, gathered around the Great War Memorial of St Matthew's with St Paul's in St Paul's Church, Full Flood, to mark the completion of the book. All the stories of those listed on the memorial have been told more fully, or even for the first time. The six were the local authors and researchers who have just published the book, which they have been working on since 2015. The 91 names on the memorial are a fifth of Winchester's Great War Dead. 30 of the 91 men joined the local Hampshire Regiment, and a further six the Winchester-based King's Royal Rifle Corps and the Rifle Brigade. Young men from the Winchester's western suburbs went to fight and die, not only on the Western Front, but also at Gallipoli, Mesopotamia, and even Russia. Men from Canada, Australia and New Zealand, with family connections in the parish, volunteered to fight for the mother country, and their names too are remembered on the memorials. One of these men had been on Captain Scott's final expedition to Antarctica in 1912 and was to die in a German prisoner of war camp. During research, contact was made with the families of three of the men, which has enriched the accounts of their lives. With increasing publicity, contact has been made with two more families. The launch at St Paul's Church has been delayed because of COVID regulations and is due to take place on Sunday, July the 25th. As well as being a record of the stories of those men, the book also adds to local history, with chapters on the growing but very different suburbs of Weak and Full Flood in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. Also, in the telling of the men and their families' lives pre-1914, many aspects of the social history of Winchester emerges, such as the more rigid social hierarchy and now vanished trades. The book has been the major aspect of the Great War Dead, Full Flood and Weak project. The project now aims to work with local schools to further children's understanding of the 1914-18 war and its impact on the local community. Western School, King's School and Peter Simmons College are the modern successors of schools which were attended by many of the men whose stories are told in the book. The Westgate County School for Girls, now the Westgate School, was also profoundly affected by the Great War. Many girls and teachers lost loved ones, and the school had to move out when the building was used to billet troops during the winter of 1915. Another aspect of the project is a website, which will add more information as contact is made with descendants.
Travellers move on to Cattle Market car park. Travellers who have set up camp in a Winchester car park will not be moved due to the council's stance on encampments. A group of around seven caravans set up in the Cattle Market car park last week, taking over at least half of the spaces available. Winchester City Council have been made aware of the travellers, but say they will not be moved on. In a statement on Friday, a City Council spokesperson said, "We are aware of a group of travellers who have set up and have been to speak to them this afternoon. We have to check there are no issues in the group that means they are unable to move on. And we always try to agree that the travellers move on voluntarily. We will take the necessary legal action to move illegal encampments on council land if necessary. It is not known whether the group are still on the car park today, but they were there on Monday.
Surgery staff told to self-isolate. A Winchester surgery has issued a notice to its patients after a number of staff members have been told to self-isolate. St Clement's Surgery in Tanner Street published the notice on Tuesday after employees were told that they must remain at home. Local reports suggest that 7 members of staff are currently self-isolating. The notice on the practice's website reads, "Unfortunately, over the past couple of days, a large number of staff members have been told to isolate. This is leading to long waiting times on the telephone. If you are able, please contact the surgery for any medical issues via e-consult or our website for any administrative queries. Thank you for your patience and understanding at this time." In a statement, the surgery and the CCG said, "We are aware that a number of administrative and reception staff at St Clement's Surgery in Winchester are currently isolating. They were contacted by the track and trace service following a positive test on a member of staff on Sunday the 4th of July. No clinical staff are affected and extra cover has been put in place to support the reception team. To relieve the pressure on staff, the surgery will close at 6 p.m. instead of 6:30 p.m. until Tuesday the 13th of July. Appointments will not be affected. Phones will still be answered until 6:30 p.m. and there should be little or no impact on patients."
Now, connected with that piece is this one, the title of which is "Significant Increase as Children Taken to A&E for Colds." Winchester Hospital's emergency department is unusually busy with an increase in children visiting with fevers, coughs and runny noses. As reported in the national news, A&E departments across England have been inundated with a sudden surge in young children suffering from infections, usually only seen in winter. Anxious parents have been bringing in preschool-aged children with symptoms such as a high temperature, putting increasing pressure on emergency departments. Helen Bates, Emergency Department Paediatric Lead for Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, which runs Winchester Hospital, said she has seen a similar trend locally. "Our emergency departments," she said, "are unusually busy for this time of year. Like others, we have seen a significant increase in the number of children presenting with fevers, coughs and runny noses, and our staff are working really hard to be there for everyone who needs us." She added, "Emergency departments can often be a difficult place for children, and parents can help us provide the right support for all our patients by considering which service is best." She urged parents to consider visiting their GP, pharmacy or contacting NHS 111 if the child is not in a life-threatening condition.
And we move on to a piece entitled "CCTV Cameras in Battle Against Fly Tipping." The civic clampdown on fly tipping in the Winchester area now includes CCTV. Winchester City Council is installing cameras around the district to put a stop to fly tipping, with 900 cases already reported this year. Council has taken action against 14 offenders in the past 6 months, including a case which appeared before Portsmouth magistrates in June. To further tackle the problem, the council is installing CCTV cameras operating on a rolling programme. These will be installed in various hotspots across the district. Despite court proceedings being suspended due to COVID-19 restrictions, cases have now resumed. The council took action against an offender who appeared before Portsmouth magistrates on June the 1st. He faced charges of failing to obtain a waste transfer note. The case was investigated by the City Council's Neighbourhood Services team, and the defendant was ordered to pay fines totalling £1,145. Councillor Russell Gordon-Smith, City Council Cabinet Member for Built Environment, said, "We want the public and would-be fly-tippers to know that we do not tolerate the illegal fly-tipping of rubbish in the district. It's dangerous to residents and wildlife, as well as being a blight on society and expensive to clear. We will prosecute whenever we have the evidence to enable it. Anyone who finds illegally dumped waste with a sticker attached, it means that the council is already aware and will arrange for disposal as soon as possible." Fly tipping has become a bigger problem since the lockdown, with critics saying the introduction of a booking system and charges at the Hampshire County Council's recycling centres has deterred many potential users, some of whom have dumped items illegally. If you find any rubbish and there is no sticker on it, report it to www.winchester.gov.uk on your Winchester app or 0300 300 0013. That number again, 0300 300 0013.
A week dedicated to fashion in city. Winchester Fashion Week is set to celebrate its 10th anniversary in style. Due to COVID-19, the event was cancelled in 2020. The week will now take place from July the 11th to 18th, with a strong focus on the celebration of style across the city. There will be virtual and in-person experiences from talks, masterclasses, workshops, showcases and more. The organiser, Winchester Business Improvement District, BID, has thanked its sponsor, the Faculty of Business, Law and Digital Technologies at the University of Winchester. Professor Martin Broad, Dean of the faculty, said, "The faculty is once again a proud sponsor of Winchester Fashion Week. For many of our students, this hugely significant event gives them the opportunity to further network with our local businesses and help boost their experiences of engaging with their love of fashion and sustainability. We look forward to this being as successful as ever." As part of the celebrations for 2021, an interactive website has been launched, which will include all details and a programme for the week. Sarah Davis, BID manager, said, "We are very excited to be planning offline events as well as many online events. To adapt to the COVID-19 situation, we have had to change the way we celebrate in style."
Thousands sign up for Leisure Park. Around 3,000 members are now signed up for the Winchester Sport and Leisure Park. The Leisure Centre at Bar End has seen increasing numbers sign up for members since it opened at the end of May. Member for Communities and Wellbeing Councillor Angela Clear said, "Membership numbers are increasing and we are receiving some great feedback on the facilities. The fitness suite signed up 1,800 new members since pre-sales went live in March, and it should be around 3,000 member mark by the beginning of July, and the target in a mature year is 5,000. Councillor Clear added, "So, despite the reduced occupancy levels in all activities, the new leisure park is one of the busiest centres in the whole of Everyone Active estate."
Countryside Fete returns with triumphant affair. The Meonstoke, Corhampton and Exton communities rose to the challenge of both English summer weather and the coronavirus restrictions to hold their church fete. It was much to the joy of those who were looking for the return of countryside events. With the early rain subsiding, visitors could once again stroll among the stalls and games, sampling local fare and sipping pims. While hand sanitising stations and contactless payment on food stalls were a sign of the times, the record number of grand raffle tickets sold, almost 2,500, showed that many welcomed the reappearance of the village fete in the Meon Valley. With generous donations to cover the running costs and prizes ranging from a private vineyard tour, cash or a luxury hamper, to vouchers for local pubs, florists, breweries and butchers, to name a few, it was clear that support from local businesses and donors was equally enthusiastic. A spokesperson said, "After holding a virtual fete in 2020, this year's offering took place on the church green in front of St Andrew's Church in Meonstoke and was opened by former County Councillor Roger Huckstep, accompanied by his wife Anne Marie. The fete was also an opportunity to showcase the applique banner created by local children and volunteers, showing dress from across the ages to celebrate the 1,000th birthday of the nearby Corhampton Church. Lunar acrobatic and aerial arts took centre stage, performing to songs from The Greatest Showman and giving lessons in everything from trapeze skills to juggling. As the Meon buskers serenaded arriving visitors and the scent of burgers filled the air, children gathered round the fire engine and crew or attempted to beat the goalie. Young and old alike feasted on homemade cakes. Come rain or shine, or COVID." And that's accompanied by a lovely fete photograph showing the banner produced by the children, showing the different dress, and the backdrop to it, Councillor Roger Huckstep, MP Flick Drummond, Alison Price of the Meon Valley Arts Society, and Father Tony Forrest.
A luxurious lease of life for former bank. A former bank in Winchester city centre is set to be transformed into a luxury showroom. One of the UK's leading suppliers of quality home furnishings, Holloways of Ludlow, is to redevelop the former RBS bank. A lease has been agreed for the basement, ground and first floors, with the showroom spanning approximately 3,500 square feet. Holloways of Ludlow was founded in 1985 by the Holloway family in the market town of Ludlow. For over 35 years, Holloways has nurtured a reputation for sourcing unique contemporary lighting, furniture and home accessories and become a leading supplier to design professionals. Since 2002, when Mark Holloway took over the reins, the business has grown significantly with showrooms in London, Kent, Bath and soon Winchester. Holloway's has firmly established itself as part of the UK's independent retail landscape. Mr. Holloway, CEO of Holloway's of Ludlow, said, "We are delighted to be opening our showroom in Winchester very soon. At Holloway's, we always aim to satisfy the needs of our customers, helping them to find their perfect furniture and lighting. We place particular importance on our showrooms as it allows us to meet and help our customers in person. Nothing beats seeing our beautiful products in the flesh. And the unparalleled personal service and expert advice we can provide in store." Chris Bickle, director in the licensed leisure team at Savills Southampton, added, "The letting to Holloways of Ludlow not only demonstrates the appeal of Winchester for luxury brands, but also the relevance of physical high street locations by providing a consumer experience. We have seen real positivity returning to the city centre after a very challenging period for many businesses."
Predator jailed for abusing girls. A dangerous predator who groomed young girls in a campaign of sexual abuse has been jailed for 8 years. Timothy Rolfe, 63, was handed the term with a 4-year extended licence after he pleaded guilty to a raft of sexual offences. Rolfe of Downlands Way, South Wanston, abused the trust of the girl's family to take advantage of his two victims, children under the age of 13, between 2015 and 2020. The family of Rolfe's victims were at Winchester Crown Court to watch the abuser being sent to prison on Friday. Sentencing Judge Jane Miller, QC, said that his behaviour was manipulative, pre-planned and predatory. Prosecuting Rob Welling said that an electronic device belonging to Rolfe was seized. He continued, "It was then put into the system and subsequently examined. It was a result of a memory card that had been used to store images from a camera, which led to revelation of counts 4 to 8. He added, "But for the finding of those images that give the whole story, the reality is that the two victims would have almost certainly had to give evidence," Mr. Welling added. Mr. Welling said that for one of the victims, it was obvious from the age of 5 she was subject to a campaign of sexual abuse. In a victim impact statement, their mother said that the family have had, quote, "their lives turned upside down," unquote. She continued, "This is something that no one should have to go through. We've been let down and betrayed. They, the victims, have had to deal with so much, and we may not know the full impact of their trauma for years to come." In mitigation, Ruby Selver said that Rolfe has expressed remorse for his offending and is seeking help for his behaviour. Ms. Selver continued, "Mr. Rolfe appreciated very soon after leaving the police station and instructing solicitors that he would not wish to see either of these two children giving evidence."
Rock School ready to return after visit from special guest. The last year saw Winnell Rock School, WRS, dismantle their permanent studios and only meet via online and socially distanced workshops. But now, the young musicians are preparing to play live music together again at the Theatre Royal Winchester on Thursday, July the 15th. Reflecting and recalling the ongoing coronavirus pandemic, WRS members will showcase their recent work in a show called Lockdown Rockdown. This follows a visit from both the Mayor of Winchester and Hannah Williams, a finalist on The Voice 2021. Project coordinator Peter Brown said, "Although the pandemic has disrupted our usual approaches, we have risen to the challenge and taken inspiration from it to create our music in new ways and different styles." He added, "We're delighted that The Voice 2021 finalist Hannah Williams has supplemented our team of tutors and has been helping coach our vocal performers." Tickets are priced at £7 and £3 for under 26s from the Theatre Royal. And this piece is accompanied by a photo of the smiling faces, some of them still masked, it has to be said, from the Will Rock School, flanked by their posters for Lockdown Rockdown.
Court jails persistent thief. A Bishop's Waltham woman, described as a perennial nuisance, has been jailed for 12 months for a string of thefts across the Winchester, Fareham, Gosport and Hayling Island areas. Eileen Hughes appeared at Southampton Crown Court on Friday, where she was jailed for thefts, which she has previously admitted. PC Sharon Conway said, "Eileen Hughes has been a perennial nuisance across the county for months. She has brazenly approached people's properties and stolen items, become aggressive when challenged, and shown no regard whatsoever to previous court orders imposed against her. I am pleased that she is now behind bars to prevent any further offending taking place."
Junction plans criticised by conservationists for fragmenting habitats. Parts of Winnall Moor's natural reserve could be shaved off and habitats destroyed under plans for a major redevelopment of M3 Junction 9, conservationists have warned. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust has criticised the proposed scheme by Highways England, saying it will destroy and further fragment important protected habitats and cause local declines in wildlife. The Trust has raised concerns that the northern corner of Winnall Moor's Nature Reserve, home to rare and notable wildlife, including kingfishers, grey wagtails, otters and water voles, will be shaved off. The protected site is of special scientific interest and a special area of conservation, containing some of the last remnants of high-quality fen grassland in Hampshire. It said, "The landscape around Winchester is already severely fragmented by the road network. The motorway construction in the early 90s cut a vital link between the South Downs and nature reserves and green space in Winchester, severely impacting wildlife and people. The damage has never been adequately addressed and is now at risk of being compounded. It wants Highways England to be held accountable for its damaging projects this time around, and is calling for the scheme to be redesigned to create a nature-positive project." Chief Executive Debbie Tan said, "We are incredibly frustrated that these plans are being put forward. The proposals represent a regressive approach to development, a continuation of a road-building philosophy that is unconcerned by the obligation to prevent harm and misses opportunities to make restitution for previous damages. This scheme foregoes any credible attempt to achieve the biodiversity net gain that any responsible developer must put front and centre, and represents a colossal failure of ambition and responsibility to achieve development that builds sympathetically with nature." The Trust has said that the current mitigation plans are extremely limited. John Roos, Highways England project manager, said, "Our proposals for improving the M3 at Junction 9 aim to strike the right balance between upgrading this busy junction and respecting the environment. Congestion around this junction is a real issue for safety and has its own environmental cost. This consultation is an opportunity for people to tell us what they think about the proposals, and we encourage the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust to submit their feedback so we can explore how we can work together to balance the vital need for increasing capacity at this junction with the important environmental considerations."
New outdoor sport in village. A special celebration was held to officially open the new outdoor table tennis table at the Grattan Recreation Ground in Sutton, Scotney. Richard Solomons of the Grattan Trust, which manages the public space, thanked everyone who had contributed. Tea and cakes were provided. Table tennis is another addition to the recreation ground, providing fun and sport all year round, weather permitting. Villager Francis Brewster, a table tennis enthusiast, came up with the idea and pulled in the pounds for the project. the Grattan Trust, agreed to part fund the table tennis table if Francis could raise at least £2,000 towards the total £4,150. Francis hit his fundraising target in just 3 weeks with the help of friends and neighbours. Francis and Richard then spent 2 mornings clearing the ground ready for installation of the rubber mulch base. Francis said, "Table tennis has been described as the best sport for your brain and has been used to rehabilitate people suffering from Alzheimer's and dementia." American neuroscientist and psychiatrist Dr. Daniel Amen is a proponent of its benefits. "I am too, and think it will be a great addition to the facilities already provided on the Grattan."
Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. Thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, to our editors Anne Brew, Jane Thomas and Sue Frain, and of course, many thanks to our readers, John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
And from me, Barbara Kearns, thank you for listening, and until the next time, goodbye and stay safe. When you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, place the correct address label on the front, and return it as soon as possible. Thank you for listening, and goodbye again.